Afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy. I call this meeting to order. Members and also the guests and testifiers, please make sure that your mics are muted. Please wait until you're recognized before you can speak. Today's hearing is being conducted remotely pursuant to Rule 10.01. This hearing can be viewed on the House Television webcast. With that, I'd like to request the Committee Legislative Assistant to now take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker.
Baker present.
Baker present. Dabney.
Dabney present.
Dabney present. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Greenman.
Greenman present.
Greenman present. Haley.
Haley present.
Haley present. Juergens.
Juergens present.
Juergens present. Cagle.
Cagle present.
Cagle present. Olson.
Present.
Olson present. And Zhang.
Present.
Zhang present. Chair Noor, we have a quorum.
Members, there's a quorum present. I would like to request the approval for minutes for March 14th. Chair
so
Devaney.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson moves the approval of minutes for March 14, 2022. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the minutes for March 14, 2022 are now approved. Members, we do have a full agenda today, and they would like to make sure that those who are testifying and presenters, please make it brief. We don't want to cut anybody off. At the same time, we do have information to share. Starting next Monday, every Monday, we may plan to do a hybrid hearing at the Capitol in room 120. We're working on the logistics. So I just wanted to let members to stay tuned on any updates that will be coming through. With that, I'd like to start with the first bill in front of us, House File 3943. Representative Sunstead, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3943 invests $250,000 each of the next 2 years in the Boys and Girls Club of the Northland in Hibbing for after-school and summer programming. The new location for the club was developed following a groundswell of support from the community, along with engagement to create a partnership with area school districts, including Hibbing Public Schools, which has committed to providing space and after-school transportation at no cost to the club. We're looking to have the location up and running this fall with 100 to 125 members. The community currently does not have any real after-school programming to offer kids. Additionally, childcare is an extreme shortage in our region, and we aren't alone in this regard. Not only that, but oftentimes children age out of daycare or childcare, and this subset of youth still needs to be supervised. They need valuable programming if their parents are at work. One of the biggest dangers to our children is boredom, which leads to participation in activities to fill time that they'd rather stay away from, or in ways that we'd rather have them stay away from. Instead, positive, healthy programming such as the academic and career exploration opportunities we're funding under this legislation is likely to lead to a more positive outcome for our young people in the area. Youth in our community deserve a robust opportunity for after-school and summer programming. These investments would make a tremendous impact for students and families in and around the Hibbing area. I'd appreciate your support. I have a few advisory board members of the Boys and Girls Club of the Northland, Hibbing's initiative, joining me today. And I'll turn that over to my testifiers at this time.
Thank you so much, Representative Sunstead. I think I didn't move the bill. I'd like to move House File 3943 to be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, you have the first testifier. Is it Ruva? If you can please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Noor, committee members, my name is Kim McLaughlin. I am one of the members of a local advisory board who is working passionately and diligently to establish a Boys and Girls Club site in Hibbing to serve our youth and area residents. It is with great privilege and honor that I am here today in support of House File 3943, a bill carried by Representative Sunstead in the House of Representatives and its companion Senate file 3621, authored by Senator Tomasoni. Both Representative Sunstead and Senator Tomasoni understand the demographics of Hibbing and the surrounding area. They understand the importance of education, wraparound programming, and the need to invest in our young people. They understand that our communities are best when every person has the opportunity to become their best and contribute through the workforce. Leading up to today, in cooperation with our public and non-public schools, our Boys and Girls Club Advisory Committee has surveyed our local families. We have completed a feasibility study whereby nearly 40 community and area leaders, including Representative Sunstead and Senator Tomasoni, met with representatives of the Boys and Girls Club of America. We have entered into an agreement whereby the Boys and Girls Club of the Northland eagerly awaits the opportunity to add Hibbing as a site under its family of existing locations in the Northland. And our school district has partnered with us through their commitment of in-kind space, and on school days, our Boys and Girls Club site will be identified as a transportation drop-off. Each of these milestones has been met with overwhelming enthusiasm, recognizing the need as well as the potential impact of a Boys and Girls Club site in Hibbing. If ratified, this bill would appropriate funds to the Boys and Girls Club of the Northland to implement after-school and summer programming at a site in Hibbing. Your support would complete the final milestone necessary for the Hibbing site to open its doors this fall, in the fall of 2022. With your help, this site will open, and as importantly, this program will be sustainable, because the Hibbing site will continue to generate grant and private funds in line with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Northland, which has been in existence for over 50 years. With an urgent need for this programming in our community and area, this fall 2022 opening is critical. In the words of our local school district superintendent, this is desperately needed programming in our community. In serving in my sixth year on the Hibbing School Board, and nearly 25 years with the Minnesota State College System, outside of my role on the Boys and Girls Club Advisory Committee, I also see and hear firsthand the increasingly urgent need among young people of all ages and their families. I also understand the wide array of benefits a Boys and Girls Club could provide in our area, and I have no doubt in your roles as representatives and committee members, you too understand the gravity of the need that presently exists to support both our current and future workforce. As you are likely aware, we are a community and area in serious need. We are in an area that is significantly impacted by poverty, with a low median household income, a high number of families who qualify for free and reduced lunch at about 50%, and to aggravate this, we have a relatively low percentage of people 25 years and older who hold college degrees. And many of our young people would continue to be first-generation college students. Sadly, about 64% of Hibbing's fifth graders reported being home alone or somewhere unsupervised after school one or more days per week. Together, we have the ability to interrupt this cycle. Undoubtedly, we've all heard about Boys and Girls Club and how they've touched the lives of so many. Boys and Girls Clubs have been around nationally for about 160 years, and they offer evidence-based programming that center around three pillars of youth development: healthy lifestyles, character and leadership development, and academic excellence. To reiterate, I'm proud to say their advisory board has entered into an agreement with the Boys and Girls Club of the Northland, who recognize the multitude of benefits a Hibbing site could provide to our young people and to the overall community and region. Our local school board and district have been enthusiastic partners in committing space and transportation. And through the creation of a Boys and Girls Club in Hibbing, we will support our youth around these three pillars of academic excellence, character and leadership development, as well as healthy lifestyles. And we will work together positively to impact the workforce and business, both in the short and long-term ranges. Already thus far in our process, we have worked with representatives from various St. Louis County agencies who have reached out for an overview of the Boys and Girls Club site in Hibbing. Members of our advisory board met with counselors from the Northeast Minnesota Office of Job Training and others who work directly with clients seeking retraining and reentry into the job market. For them and their clients, having affordable, safe place for their children to be during out-of-school hours is currently a barrier to retraining and reentry into the job market. A Boys and Girls Club in Hibbing will help in removing that barrier and help in getting today's adults back into the workforce most immediately. Hours available to work as well as productivity tend to fall off after 3 p.m. when children are out of school. So whether it's that minor, that nurse, that plumber, that electrician, productivity tends to decline when parents are worried about their children. If parents know their child is safe in a positive environment and where there's after-school programming, that parent will be able to focus on their task, maintain their productivity. It may even afford a working parent the opportunity to work longer hours or additional shifts. It may even allow that parent to care or caregiver an opportunity to maintain more consistent employment. And most importantly, building that dream for our young people. A Boys and Girls Club in Hibbing will help young people in Hibbing and the surrounding area build that vision. They will be introduced to professions they may not even know existed, and that job and career exploration will begin with some of our youngest learners. Our young people will connect with a caring adult, a mentor who will help form that dream. And as importantly, at the Boys and Girls Club of Hibbing, we will help our young people believe in themselves and believe they can achieve. They will believe they can be that firefighter, that paramedic, that nurse, or that teacher. From a very early age, they will build the foundation necessary to turn that dream into reality, and they will be provided with additional skills, knowledge, and the passion to get there. So as Minnesotans, one of the things the COVID-19 pandemic has brought to the forefront is the urgent need to improve the socio-emotional need and physical health of our young people. As adults, now more than ever, we understand the importance of building character and leadership in our young people from a very early age. And in your work as representatives and serving on this committee, you recognize that helping us establish a Boys and Girls Club in Hibbing can have the most positive impact on the economy and jobs today and for years to come. So our committee, our community, and our students are passionate and working hard to establish a Boys Girls and Girls Club in Hibbing. For the community and the area youth and families, it would mean the world if the tripartisan members of our House of Representatives were to support House Floor 3943. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ms. McDonald, for your testimony. Do you have any other individual?
Chair Noir?
Representative Sunstein.
Thank you. I have another testifier. Principal Carrie McDonald is with us today as well.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair and committee members, my name is Carrie McDonald. I am also a member of the local advisory board for the Hibbing Boys and Girls Club Initiative. I've been an educator in Hibbing for 25 years, serving as a high school math teacher, the high school assistant principal, and now an elementary principal. The demographics of the community of Hibbing have changed over the past 25 years. We currently have over 50% free and reduced lunch population in our elementary schools. Our students and families are in desperate need of a Boys and Girls Club. The three pillars that Ms. McLaughlin previously stated will be the foundation of our programming. I'm going to focus on the second pillar, which is character and leadership development. And the programming, one of the options would be workforce readiness, which is, I believe, part of the reason why we are in front of your committee today. Communities across the nation face significant challenges ensuring young people are adequately prepared to enter the workforce. Boys and Girls Clubs are closing the opportunity and job readiness gap by preparing youth for success in their first job and helping them develop a plan to pursue the career of their dreams. Four key areas of workforce development in the program for the Boys and Girls Club would be, number one, essential skill development, which is age-appropriate social emotional development. Number two would be employability skills and certificates, such as interviewing, resume, tech skills. The third is career exposure. They would have discovery opportunities and career assessments. And the fourth is work-based learning, where they would have real life, hands-on work experience. All of these programs provide amazing opportunities for our students, but ultimately having a safe and supportive environment while building supportive relationships with caring adults will meet our children's basic needs. I ask that you support House File 3943 for our kids. Thank you, Chair and committee members.
Thank you so much, Ms. McDonald. I think I wanted to recognize you for that statement. Representative Sansa, do you have any other testifier before we conclude?
I do. I have an intern with the City of Hibbing. I am not going to attempt pronouncing the last name. I apologize, but her first name is Ruba, and she has been part of the study as well.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Hello, my name is Ruva Tsoka, and I am another member of the Boys and Girls Club of Hibbing Advisory Board. Throughout my 2 years living in Hibbing, I have come to see the strength of the community and the support they have for each other. Additionally, meeting the community members, I have recognized the hope for having more youth development programs in the area, especially for those who do not have the means of participating in extracurricular or outside care options. Parents also struggle finding wraparound care services for their children, something that has been highlighted during the pandemic. Hibbing has a very unique workforce where many families work shift schedules and often need care for their children outside of the 9-to-5 schedule. And as mentioned before, demographics of Hibbing makes it all the more difficult to find affordable options of care for the kids. Combination of the challenges, availability, wraparound needs, and affordability are challenges that the Boys and Girls Club can cover. The programming that will be offered is proven, meaning that it's evidence-based and guaranteed to provide positive results. The Boys and Girls Club is also a way to invest in the community. Every dollar given to the club will yield almost $10 in economic benefits. There are many other perks of establishing a club in Hibbing that I would be more than willing to speak on. As a former Boys and Girls Club member in Omaha, Nebraska, I can confidently say that the programming is it's proven and it has provided me so many positive outcomes later on in life. The Boys and Girls Club offers activities that leave a very lasting impression. They have a strong alumni community that are willing to serve and give back to their community members. They also offer programming that fills gaps and opportunities for new experiences. And I believe that a Boys and Girls Club of Hibbing would be a perfect fit for the youth in the area. It also gives parents a peace of mind. Safety and care are the top priorities for the staff members who work with the children. I ask that you support House File 3943 for our community. Thank you, Chair and committee members. We stand for questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Stocker, for your testimony. Members, any discussion? I see Representative Jug.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two quick questions, Representative Sandsteed. Has the this Boys and Girls Club in Hibbing received state grants or state funding in the past?
Representative Sandsteed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, to my knowledge, it has not. We don't actually have the club up and running yet. We are looking for, this is the last leg. We have other commitments from different sources, foundations for funding. This is the last leg that we're looking for to get it going. Currently, we do not have the program in our community. We're seeking to get it into our community.
Very good. No other question. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you so much. No any other further discussion from members? I know out of school time is a great program, and especially with the Boys and Girls Club. So Representative Sunstead, do you have any closing remarks?
First of all, I just would like to say thank you to the panel that has put in so much time into looking into this program, doing the legwork, getting the other commitments to make this possibility become a reality should we get this funding. And as an educator myself, I just want to say I know how important it is to have healthy activities for our students to be participating in after school. Again, I mentioned earlier in my opening comments that many of our students, you know, age out of a daycare setting or situation. And unfortunately, unless there's some type of structure for them, the opportunities that they tend to find aren't always the healthiest for them. This is just a great fit for a community that's in need to help adults get back into the workforce and have a great opportunity, a safe place for our kids to go after school. And I would greatly appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Sunstead. I renew my motion that House File 3943 be laid over for possible inclusion. And thank you so much to the testifiers. With that, members, I'm transferring the chairmanship to Representative Jay Jong. It's that time of the year that we try to go to different places. But Chair Jong, you are going to be running and then I'll be back. Thank you so much, members. I'll be back shortly.
All right, up next we have House File 3953. I'll move that House File 3953 be referred to the Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Berg, present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3953 appropriates $300,000 from the General Fund for a grant to fund Building Strong Communities, which is a multi-trade apprenticeship readiness program that has been intentionally designed to connect with women, BIPOC, and veteran community members with union building and construction trade careers, which clearly aligns with our values. The Building Strong Communities program provides individuals with an opportunity to start a career in the union trades with the knowledge and skills needed to successfully enter a union-registered apprenticeship program. BSC is guided by the construction industry and is focused on the long-term goal of creating career opportunities for program participants. It works in partnership with the industry, post-secondary institution, community organizations, project donors, end users, and municipalities. This works with participants through not only the program, but also through placement into their chosen trade and throughout the first year in the industry. It is a statewide program with programs running in the Twin Cities, Rochester, Duluth, North Hennepin County community administers, and 8 weeks of the most virtual classroom training. And the trades provide up to 4 weeks hands-on training to get participants ready for their trade. I think I have a couple of testifiers and I will yield the time over to them. Thank you.
All right, first, I believe we have Megan Hennen. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, Megan Hennen with the Associated Builders and Contractors. Our contractor members and the women and men they employ are part of the 73% of construction industry in Minnesota that choose to be merit shop craft professionals. They build our schools, medical facilities, restaurant and retail establishments, multifamily housing, clean energy projects like solar and wind farms, and so much more. Our contractors have registered apprenticeship programs through the Department of Labor and Industry, some through the Federal Department of Labor, and others have customized and unique training programs tailored around their particular line of work. ABC and our contractors do not receive a dollar of state taxpayer dollars for recruiting efforts and training programs. We do not object to promoting careers in construction. ABC and our members are doing that every day. But what we object to is the lack of access groups like ABC and our contractors have to the program this bill addresses. We have not been contacted by Building Strong Communities to be a partner with our group, nor are our state-approved registered apprenticeship programs listed as a resource in any of their outreach efforts or materials. When you go to their website, their mission reads, aligning stakeholders to provide industry-driven apprenticeship readiness pathways into union construction careers. This seems to be a fairly narrow scope. Considering 73% of Minnesota's construction workforce choose to work for merit shop contractors, it is troubling that the state is considering directing more taxpayer dollars on top of the millions of dollars in previous years that go towards excluding other leading construction industry partners in such a way. Upon further review of the program, it would appear that this program is not lacking the potential for financial backing. The program is partnered with 15 separate building trades unions and three of the state's largest contractors. The Met Council's website boasts of one of the particular partnerships with the contractor building the costly and delayed Southwest light rail. Additionally, nowhere in this funding is there a reporting requirement for BSC to show how many women, BIPOC community members, and veterans are contacted, how many signed up for their programs, or how many obtained jobs. I also think it would be helpful for this committee and the legislature to know where this money is going. Is it for a website, full-time employees, or training? This proposal is on top of the millions of dollars in recent legislative sessions that construction trades have asked for. Construction Careers Foundation, Helmets to Hard Hats, and the 49ers online apprenticeship prep course come to mind. In its attempt at being inclusionary, this bill is both exclusionary and limiting, and I would request that the committee take a look at this grant and ask the Building Strong Communities provide all construction career paths a chance to be promoted in their marketing materials. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Sannon. Next testifier, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Tom Duglitz, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. I'm here to speak in favor of House File 3953, Rep. Berg's bill, which appropriates $300,000 in fiscal year 23 for a grant from the Commissioner of Deed to the Building Strong Communities program. As mentioned, Building Strong Communities is a multi-trade apprenticeship readiness program that is intentionally designed to connect women, BIPOC community members, and veterans into registered union apprenticeship programs of their choosing. The Building Strong Communities program has been successful in transitioning some of the most underrepresented community members and getting them into meaningful family-supporting construction careers that they can feel proud of. A few years back, this started as a metro-based program that had been smaller scale, but still had the goal of placing women, BIPOC community members, and veterans into the trades. This past year, we turned into a statewide program that is in week 5 of 12 of this program as we speak. There are over 40 participants, and up to 80% so far of these participants meet those intended goals between the metro area, Duluth, and Rochester. North Hennepin Community College does offer 4 credits for this program. Once successfully completing this program, they'll be ready to enter into one of our affiliated apprenticeship programs as the summer construction season starts up in May and June. The uniqueness of this program that brings together industry, post-secondary schooling, community-based organizations, project owners, and end users results in a program that is letting highly skilled workers into the workforce. Sometimes opportunity and education are the great equalizer for someone to start a career. And I'd stand for any questions if there are any.
Thank you. Are there any member questions? Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Berg, just the testimony we heard from Ms. Hannon, why are we excluding certain entities in this bill?
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton, for your question. I don't think it's a matter of excluding anyone from any opportunity. We know that union jobs pay higher wages, come with better benefit packages, and there's greater safety on the job site. Any person currently working in the trades is welcome to walk into the union hall and sign up with the union and be placed on union job sites. So there's no element of this that is exclusionary. It's two different programs. And for example, this program is uniquely targeted at veterans, at women, and members of the BIPOC community. And we don't see that coming out of the ABC programs, not that specific targeting, as well as North Hennepin will provide instruction in interpersonal skills and foundational construction math. That's something unique as well that's offered. And the participants of this program will actually earn 4 college credits while attending the apprenticeship readiness program. So those are just some of the benefits that we're looking at through this program.
And Mr. Chairman.
The lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Berg, does this entity have access to any other funds other than funds from the state?
Representative Berg.
Sure am. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton for the question. I'm not aware of any other funding, but I can pass that also to our testifier, Mr. Dickler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton. As of now, the trades, the affiliated trades, the 15 trades that are involved in this, they are funding this program. And as we expand it statewide, we're trying to be intentional in what we're doing, and we're trying to get bigger and bigger to get more people in the trades as needed.
Representative Jurgens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Berg, Mr. Dicklich just mentioned 15 trade unions, but it sounded like there were some others from Ms. Hannon's testimony that were not at the table. Can we hear who some of these other unions are, or more specifically, are the carpenters, the operating engineers, 49ers, electrical workers, who has been consulted in part of this?
Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Jurgens, for the question. I will go ahead and pass that over to Mr. Dicklich again.
Mr. Dicklich.
Mr. Chair and Representative Jurgens, under our umbrella that represents up to 70,000 members, we have 16 affiliated trades and 15 of them. So all our affiliated trades minus the carpenters are supporting this program financially.
Jurgens.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
Any more questions? All right, Representative Berg, you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I've been working for about a decade and a half in the labor movement. I have done a lot of work around targeting communities of color to have opportunities to go into the trades. We know that in times past, that hasn't always been an easy pathway for them. So that is a value that resonates deeply with me, as well as clearly women in the trades and our veterans. I believe I share that with Representative Jurgens for sure. And so I just urge support of this bill. It's a great bill. It's a great opportunity for our youth who don't see a 4-year degree as their pathway to success. And I urge support.
Thank you, Representative Berg, and I will renew my motion to House File 3953 be referred to the Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Baudry, please take the roll.
Chair Noor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Zhang.
Aye.
Lead Hamilton.
No.
Baker.
No.
Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Frankie.
Aye.
Greenman.
Aye.
Haley. Haley. Jurgens.
Jurgens, aye.
Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Katiza Watun.
Katiza Watun, aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Zhang.
Aye.
Haley? Haley? Vice Chair Zhang, there are 10 ayes and 2 nays.
10 ayes and 2 nays, so motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Berg. You're on your way to the next committee. And I see that Chair Nor has returned, so I'll give you back the gavel, Chair Nor.
Thank you, Chair Zhong, and thank you for transferring online the gavel here. So with that, I do have House File 3940. Representative Greenman, please move your bill and proceed. And members and also testifiers, we'll try to keep 10 minutes per bill because of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm grateful to be able to present House File 3940 to support the Ladino Economic Development Center to assist in providing job training, workforce development, and agricultural assistance with an appropriation of $1 million in fiscal year 2023. In the nearly 20 years that LEDC has been operating, they have a strong track record of partnering with the state on workforce development, technical assistance, education, business development, and training. LEDC has a proven track record of helping people all over the state during the pandemic. During the pandemic, they stepped up. They provided assistance to over 5,000 households as the number one administrator of COVID-19 housing assistance program. In the last 2 years, they've administered over $24 million in federal, state, and local funding to hundreds of entrepreneurs and small businesses across the state. We have the executive director of LEDC, as well as one of their small business partners here to testify. So I'll leave it to them to provide more in-depth detail about the funding requests and the important work that it supports. But before I turn it over to them, I just wanted to highlight a few key reasons I think that this investment is important for us to make. LEDC is a trusted and critical partner. The demand for their services has grown exponentially during the last 2 years. At times, they reported having, at the peak of the pandemic, receiving as many as 800 phone calls a day. LEDC is seeking $1 million to continue assisting our communities by providing job training, workforce development services, and that technical assistance. Based on their success, investing in LEDC will continue to produce at that high level for our communities. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to our testifier.
Mr. Jimenez, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Henry Jimenez. I'm the Executive Director of the Latino Economic Development Center. I want to thank you, the committee members, and Representative Freeman for your leadership and support and our efforts to continue to support services to small business community. We obviously are here in support of the House File 3940. And as Representative Greenman mentioned, for nearly 20 years, the Latino Economic Development Center has been a great partner to the state of Minnesota through our efforts in the workforce development, technical assistance, education, training, as well as helping first-time farmers in our agriculture department. But I won't get into that, just to tell you how much more we do. In the 20 years spanned, Latino community has grown to close to 400,000 across the state. And with that, the growth of Latino small businesses has grown as well. So an organization like LEDC is important to provide those services. We need to continue to invest in small businesses in our community. LEDC has supported hundreds of businesses start or expand. We have also supported individuals with upward mobility in their entrepreneurship careers. Nearly 100 individuals per year go through that program. Many of them then later open a business because of our entrepreneurship classes and the relationship that we build with them and the trust. In 2013, we became a community development financial institution and have provided access to affordable and patient capital to close to 200 businesses from our lending program alone. In the last 18 months, we have supported 500 businesses access emergency relief funding from federal, state, and local level at no cost to businesses, most of which is covered through our fundraising efforts, which to me, this is where we need to be a clear partner with the state. If we are providing all of these services, it does not make sense that the majority of my time should be fundraising to support businesses. I think we can find a way to support each other in this endeavor. We provided assistance to 47 food producers and 133 agricultural workers, again, connecting them to our services in multiple ways. We became the top administrator of COVID-19 Housing Assistance Program, CHAP, supporting close to 5,000 households across the state, access funding to be able to pay for their mortgage, rent, and utilities. Again, we're not even a housing organization, but we saw that the state needed our help, and we came to support the state with the services that we can provide for CHAP. All of these efforts accumulated to a total of $24 million in relief funding to Minnesotans. I can assure you that if LDC did not exist, there would have been $24 million less to Minnesotans in the last 18 months. That is an investment, folks. Imagine how much more we could have done if we were better prepared, had more funding to be able to do more. While local and state governments closed or worked remotely during the pandemic, we never closed. This is how we found success and continued to support the small businesses that depended on our efforts. We made our commercial kitchens available to our restaurants whose model changed, and subsidized caterers who we knew needed flexibility as their contracts were postponed or canceled. We are here today to ask you to invest in the work we are doing to support small businesses and entrepreneurs continue to overcome this time of need, but also this time of opportunity. An investment in LADC is an investment in creating more small businesses in Minnesota. And right now, I would like to yield the floor and have one of our business owners who we've supported through this time, Mr. Manuel Rutiaga.
Mr. Rutiaga, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Chairman Noor and members of the House Workforce Committee. My name is Manuel Rutiaga, and I'm the owner of Gorditas El Durango, located in East Sizenpole. I opened my restaurant at the end of 2019 on Lake Street. But soon after opening, I started facing challenges. First came the pandemic, which impact my sales because of the shelter in place orders. Then came the unrest following the murder of George Floyd, and I suffered loss due to theft and damaged my restaurant. LDC stepped in with support and technician assistance to navigate my challenging times. LDC helped me apply to grants from DIT and other agencies, as well providing small grants. On December 5th, 2021, I moved my restaurant to Plaza del Sol, where I have affordable rent that allow me increase my profits. We are having a positive impact on paying filing career by becoming an anchor for Latino economic and is sizable in my new location. I provide employed to five people who live in the community, contributing to job creation. I foresee my business flourishing and knows that LDC will be there to support me. Thank you for your time today. I hear my House File 3940.
Thank you so much for your testimony. To Representative Greenman, do you have any? I see Lid Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to encourage everybody, if you haven't already, to go over and tour, meet with Mr. Jimenez and his team, tour LADC. They've done great work over the years. I've always enjoyed working with them. I just want to say hello to my friend Henry. And like I said, encourage everybody to go over and meet with them. I'm sure they're happy to answer your questions.
Absolutely, Lynn Hamilton. To Representative Greenman for any closing remarks as we move quickly through the other bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just echo Representative Hamilton's encouragement. LADC is a wonderful program helping folks throughout and building community throughout the state. And so I look forward to hopefully the support of this in the omnibus bill. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much. Representative Greenman renews her motion that House File 3940 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. With that, we move to House File 2579. Chair Schultz, welcome back to the committee. I'll move House File 2579 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I also see you have an A1 amendment. So I will move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape that you want. Lid Hamilton, you still have your hand up.
Sorry, and I just didn't put it down.
All right, so Chair Schultz, did you just want to go briefly over the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Chair Noor and members. The A1 amendment just updates the appropriation amount to $3 million and changes the year from 2023 to 2024.
Very well. So members, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, the A1 amendment is now adopted. To your bill as amended, Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members. This bill was brought to me by a famous Duluthian, Galen Lee, who I hope is here to testify. But she made me aware that many venues for artists, performing arts spaces, are not physically accessible to performers and the workers in those spaces, those individuals who have disabilities. So this would create a $3 million appropriation for a grant from the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development, a grant to nonprofits to fund improvements in these performing arts spaces in Minnesota. And the nonprofit selected by the commissioner would use these funds for subgrants or to create a revolving loan fund for low or no interest loans to make those improvements. And I have two testifiers with me today, Chair Noor.
Please proceed, Chair Schultz, and invite your testifiers.
I believe I have Galen Lee here.
Miss Galen Lee?
Yes, you do. Can you hear me? Yes, I'm here.
Yes, we can. Please Hello? Introduce yourself. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Okay, thank you. My name is Galen Lee Tressler. I'm a Duluthian and a musician and a public speaker. I'm currently in New York doing a Broadway show, so I'm sorry if there's traffic noise in the background, but I am coming to testify. I'm so grateful that Representative Schultz brought this up. I, in 2016, won NPR Music's Tiny Desk Contest, and I started touring full-time after that. And so often the venues that I came across weren't just inaccessible for me, but also for the audiences. And what I mean by that is people had trouble either getting in the door, they weren't able to access the bathrooms, or they weren't able to see the stage. And then as a performer myself, I also ran into barriers regularly at venues, music venues specifically, where I wouldn't have access to the stage because there wouldn't be a ramp, where I couldn't use the bathroom. At the venue as a performer where the green room wasn't accessible, so I'd end up getting ready in a mop closet ahead of the show, and that there was no access to the stage, so I would end up playing on the floor. And not just for the cultural reasons why I think it's important to include disabled artists and audience members, because obviously if we are trying to create a more just society for all Minnesotans, I think it's important to include disability in that, but also for the economic impact. Disabled people make up 61 million Americans, and so leaving them out of cultural institutions and venues is also just poor financial planning for the future, especially as baby boomers age and as performers age. This is important to me to see this grant in particular, because some of the grants or loans could go towards for-profit venues. And the biggest barrier I have seen to making venues accessible is that many venues, especially the smaller ones, are for-profit, and therefore they're not eligible for many of the grants and other funding opportunities that nonprofit art spaces are. But so many artists, myself included, don't want to have to limit themselves to like the very few performing art spaces that are accessible. So making a wider variety of spaces accessible enhances the arts, not just with performers, but audience members. I just really am grateful that this bill is coming up. And I urge you culturally to support this bill in order to make for a greater, diverse, and equitable Minnesota, but also financially making the arts more open for performers and for customers will provide a greater economic diversity as well, and more expenses that you guys can raise that go into small businesses. So please support the small businesses in making those changes that make their spaces more accessible. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate your testimony. The next testifier I have, Ms. Roderick. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed. Mr. Roderick.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the board, or members of the committee. My name is Gabriel Roderick. I'm very excited for this bill because as a performer who uses a wheelchair, this would make my life and career so much easier. I've spent my career as a musician and performer forcing my way into inaccessible venues and stages. And as time goes on, I feel more and more exhausted doing that, forcing my way into venues. I don't perform as regularly as I used to, and a big reason for that is because of inaccessibility. It's hard to feel welcomed in a space when you struggle to get into the door and onto the stage. And music and performance, I do dance also. I do some improv comedy. And all of this has been vital to my own healing and acclimation to my own spinal cord injury. It's challenged me, it's given me purpose, and it's helped me build a really, really strong community of like-minded people. And as important as this bill is to my own life and career, this bill feels vital to the arts community in general. Minnesotans with disabilities have important stories to tell, stories about the body, aging, mortality, pain. These stories are important perspectives that teach us how to care for each other, how to care for our own bodies. They teach us that aging is not something to fear, it's something to embrace. They teach us that even when our bodies don't work like able bodies, we still have the power to contribute to our communities. But these stories often go unheard because we expend so much energy just to show up, get into the door, get onto the stage. And I know one other practicing musician who uses a wheelchair, that's Galen Lee. I'm excited that she's here today. I kind of figured that this was her doing. And I know tons of wheelchair users who used to be musicians, dancers, and actors, but they've given up on these forms of expression in part because it takes so much effort to show up. And to the places where we can share our stories, experience stories, and making stages accessible is about giving everyone an equal opportunity to share their art and their stories and experience those stories. And we're missing out on a lot of beautiful art and beautiful stories because of inaccessible stages and inaccessible venues. And I urge you all to support HF 2579. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Roderick, for your testimony, and I appreciate you giving us all that information. We believe in inclusion in this committee, and I see Chair Lead Hamilton want to comment on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Schultz, thank you, Chair Schultz. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. To the testifiers, you can't see it, but I too am sitting in a wheelchair, and I want to let you know that just hearing your testimony and your stories, it motivates me, it inspires me, and gives me hope. Thank you.
You said it well, Lead Hamilton. Any discussion, members? See none. Chair Schultz, any closing remarks?
Well, I just want to thank our testifiers for advocacy. And I just want to let members know that with very minimal cost, we can make a huge difference in people's lives by being more inclusive. Really, it doesn't cost a lot to make these spaces more accessible. And this is one way that the state can help make that happen. So Chair Hamilton, or Representative Hamilton, thank you. Maybe you can help me get this bill through the Senate, make some phone calls, but I appreciate everyone's support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Schultz. I renew my motion. House File 2579, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much, Chair Schultz, and to the testifiers. Chair Marquardt, welcome to the Workforce and Business Development. It seems we've been exchanging from one committee to the other. It's that time of the year. So welcome. I moved House File 4198 to be re-referred to Industrial Education, Economic Development, Finance and Policy Committee. To your bill, Mr. Chair.
So, well, thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members, and I really appreciate you adjusting times around our committees. I really appreciate that. So, members, I'm excited about House File 4198 because I think it could be a real game changer in how we address these big workforce needs that we have. And, you know, I think the biggest workforce challenge we have, according to our economy, is our workforce shortage. And I'm not going to, for the sake of time, go into all the things that's creating obstacles for our economy, but we know our workforce shortage having a big impact. Right now, according to the latest February forecast, for every 10 job vacancies, there's only 6 available unemployed workers out there, and we know it's hitting everyone. And our demographers have talked about why we have it, and one reason is baby boomers like myself retiring and not enough people, young people replacing people like myself. But the other reason is, and if you look at 2 studies the state demographer has taken within the last 7 or 8 years, 3/4 of our net out domestic migration are young people ages 18 through 21. And so what House File 4198 does, it brings all the stakeholders together to bear in a collaborative that will focus on creating a pipeline of workers through students, career academies, pipeline of workers and high demand, high wage jobs, and also bring in adults in the current workforce who are underskilled or underemployed and match them up with the job skills that are out there. And so it's a unique model. And the model, and there are some handouts and there's kind of a schematic of it, but it's community career workforce academies. And this is bringing together our schools, our school districts, mainly through career academies. It's bringing our 2-year colleges, our 4-year colleges, our business sector, our nonprofits, our elected officials, county and city, to come up with one unified strategy and plan to address these workforce issues. And you know, right now you have career academies kind of doing their thing, 2- and 4-year colleges doing their thing, businesses are trying to address this, county boards and so forth. This brings everyone together, zeroes in and making sure everyone's moving in the right direction. And with this, we don't recreate or reinvent the wheel. The nucleus of this is these career workforce that exist, and the focus is on students. As you look through the bill, the focus is on students, that we can create a robust, individualized, relevant, and rigorous program where every high school student has an opportunity to learn a skill in the job force that matches them up with a high demand, high wage job, and also creates a seamless path to a higher ed post-secondary credential or secondary degree. It also, again, would bring in adults who are currently in the workforce who need upskilling to meet the current demands. So how does it work? So what it would be is $40 million in grants that would be distributed from the Department of Revenue, but DEED would be the ones that would register the applications. The target would be in the tax committee. But the way it would work is a county would have to have a resolution with a plan saying all these people have come together. They'd have to have this plan. They'd have to show they have facility needs and show they have programming needs and that they're meeting all the qualifications of the statute. That application would go into the Department of Employment and Economic Development, who would look it over and be able to grant up to a maximum of $10 million for each of these career Community Career Workforce Academies, and then distribute that money, send a DOR saying this county qualifies, send that $10 million for this program. Now, we've laid out $10 million specifically for the Moorhead Career Workforce Academy, and that is because they are ready to go. They have done the work, and it's been spearheaded by Superintendent Brandon Lunick, who will be testifying here and working with a lot of partners. But they're ready to go. And one big part of this is that at the very end, I think it's 2024 we have in the bill, DEED does a report and says, are we getting the results that they said they were going to get? And so that's how this bill would work. I think it's going to create huge benefits for students who are going to learn a skill, be ready to go, hit the ground running, and stay in Minnesota because that job is there. It's going to help businesses find available workforce to meet their high demand, high wage jobs and skills that they need. It's going to address the workforce shortage and skills gap. And in the end, ultimately, it benefits the economy and our communities and our workforce. And so it's a win-win-win overall. So members, we've got many letters of support that are in there. There's one letter from the Coalition of Businesses or Colleges, every county commissioner, the city, and also some other letters that you have in there. But I have a couple testifiers and then some folks who will be there if they have to ask questions. Mr. Chair, if we could have Brandon Lunick, Superintendent for Moorhead, testify, and then next would be Catherine Grinberg, from the local chamber. And then we have Clay County Commissioner, President Ann Carrie Brimhall, who's available from Minnesota Technical and Community College to answer any questions. And I think there might be others on too. So, Mr. Chair, that's kind of it in a nutshell, and I'll be ready to answer questions after the testimony's done.
Thank you so much, Chair Marquardt. Superintendent Brandon Lunick, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Okay, thank you, Chair Knorr and committee members. I'm Brandon Lunick, Superintendent of the Moorhead Area Public Schools. And like Paul stated, this bill is addressed to support our region, like many others across Minnesota that are struggling with a severe workforce shortage. And as an education partner, it is our goal to work alongside with our business, nonprofit, higher ed, and other community partners to develop innovative solutions to address our workforce crisis. Two of the major efforts are creating a strong pipeline of workers in the in-demand fields and upscaling the current workforce with an emphasis on our minority populations as the demographics of our region continue to change. We know that the minority populations, new Minnesota citizens, and underskilled workforce are in most need in our community at this point. And so we're working with our nonprofit, our business, and our higher ed partners to provide the necessary training to support these specific populations. The programming funds will support the creation of personalized learning for our students in grade 9, 12, but also the creation of adult education programs, supported roles, and retrofitting current programs. The programming that will be offered will be in the high demand careers in the region. Education in these careers will provide a skilled workforce, a stable workforce pipeline, and that will lead to quality livelihoods. Future students and adult learners will have incredible opportunities in this facility, this career academy, to explore their potential and work towards industry certifications and gain real work skills, ultimately impacting the community, the region, the state, and ultimately and potentially the world. At our career academy, we already have 974 9 through 12 students enrolled in at least one related in-demand field. Further build out of the space would permit us to expand offerings and capacity for not only our students, but for adult learners as well. And that's, to me, is a large positive of this bill is that it's not only serving our 912, but it's also going to serve the adults in our region and beyond. Although we have the potential to train our adult learners, we have limited opportunities at this point, and this bill would help bring all of these entities together to work under one roof to provide a robust opportunity. Collaborative learning, student engagement, and authentic experiences are at the core of what we are going to try to offer and reimagine for every adult and student in our community and region. Innovative changes to curriculum and the adoption of this new model will enable both students and adults to have improved access to career pathways and make our region and state stronger as a result. These are the key drivers behind what we want to create here in the Moorhead region, and with support of House File 4198, we will be on track to do, we will be on track to achieve such goals. I'd be available for questioning at the end.
Thank you so much, Superintendent. The next person in line is Ms. Greenberg. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Chairman Knorr, Vice Chair Zhang, and members of the House Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy Committee, my name is Catherine Grinberg, and I serve as the Vice President of Public Policy for the Fargo-Moorhead West Fargo Chamber of Commerce. It is our mission to actively promote a thriving and vibrant metro for generations to come. We represent over 1,900 members and serve as a catalyst for economic growth and prosperity for businesses, our members, and the greater community. This afternoon, I come before you in this committee to express our overwhelming support of House File 4198. As Representative Marquardt and Dr. Lunick both said, this bill brings together high schools, two and four-year colleges, businesses, nonprofits, and elected officials together to create and implement one unified strategy and plan to address our critical workforce needs. Through the support of community-based workforce solutions like community career workforce academies, our state can continue to address the growing demand for skilled laborers. As we talk to the businesses throughout the community, their number one issue by far is the lack of workforce. From welders to nurses, semi-drivers to teachers, and every job in between, our businesses are struggling to hire qualified individuals. While this issue continues to plague communities all across the state and nation, we must work together in creating a unified strategy to identify solutions to this challenge. Community Career Workforce Academies are an opportunity for public-private partnerships to thrive and for the state of Minnesota to address the workforce challenge head on. Our society has begun to realize that a post-secondary career path is not for every student, especially with the growing demand for skilled laborers. States like North Dakota have already begun spending millions of dollars on career workforce academies to address this critical workforce issue. For example, during the 2021 special legislative session, the state of North Dakota appropriated over $80 million in matching funds to career academies across the state. To overcome this widespread workforce challenge, we must create a robust learning environment promoting career exploration and striving for choice-ready graduates. Moreover, to overcome this widespread challenge, the state of Minnesota must continue to make investment in creative workforce solutions. The Moorhead Career Academy in Clay County is an extraordinary example of innovative solutions that exist in the state of Minnesota. With the financial support outlined in this bill, new and existing academies can expand access to new Minnesota residents and underskilled workers. If there's one thing that you take away from my testimony today, it is that workforce challenges will not be solved individually. It can only be solved as a community. And this bill ensures the collaboration of all stakeholders, including elected officials, high schools, two and four-year colleges, businesses, and nonprofits. The Chamber is committed to combating workforce issues and stands ready to partner with stakeholders to tackle this issue. I'd also like to direct your attention to a business coalition letter that you should receive from Representative Marquardt, where over 20 businesses stated their support. As such, we support House File 4198 and respectfully urge you to do the same. Thank you for your service to the state of Minnesota and your attention to this critical workforce issue. And I'll stand for questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Greenberg, for your testimony. And members, any discussion? I know this is an important issue which requires all hands on deck. Chair Davini.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just really want to thank Chair Marquardt for bringing forward this bill. To your point, Chair Knorr, about all hands on deck, one piece that is often missing is the schools are doing one thing, the higher education institutions are doing another. The business community is talking about a third, and it's very difficult to get folks around the table and to align those different players along one call of play in football. And I just reflect on how much more powerful it would be for all of the players, from the young person in school pursuing a career aspiration, to get the training, to get connected to the business community, to know that they're moving into an area, into an economic sector where there's need and where there's going to be an employment opportunity, what that means. And then on the receiving end, what it means for the business community to know that there's connections between the schools and what they need in terms of worker skills and attitudes. So just want to thank Chair Marquardt for recognizing that and coming forward with a creative proposal to help build a model for the rest of the state. Thank you, Chair Noor.
Thank you so much, Chair Devney. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Marquardt. Great bill. I love the collaboration here. Mr. Lunick and Ms. Grinberg did a great job explaining this. The part that I'm having my head around here is we just didn't avoid this $2.7 billion tax increase to businesses yesterday with unemployment insurance, and we're trying to do good things on the backside to get people to work, and yet that's going to be a major issue for folks around the state. So we've got to make sure that we look at this in totality, and we got to make sure that we deal with these issues right away, because I love this kind of bill. I love this idea. But we have also got to understand that when tax increases affect businesses and job creators, we're gonna have it harder to employ people and fill our workforce areas. So I just hope that everybody on this call realizes the importance of all working together on this issue, that we've got to make it easier for employers, employees. But I love this bill. I want to support this, but I just wanted to make sure that I don't want to feel like we're being hypocrites by raising taxes and doing this all on the backside too. So I really support this and I want to get it done, but I wanted to make sure we made that comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Baker, for your comment there. So to Chair Marquardt, I don't see any other member. If you have any closing remarks.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the comments from members. And I really want to thank everyone who's come forward locally, starting with Superintendent Lunick and the Chamber and our 2 and 4 year colleges elected officials. They're the ones that spearheaded it. That's why I'm here today with this idea. And it is one-time funding. And let's see if it works. That's why we want to know with the report at the end, are the results happening? And we're not reinventing the wheel. We're not the current existing infrastructure, which we have supported in a bipartisan fashion, the career academies, our colleges and business and so forth, that's all there. It's just bringing it together in a much more powerful fashion that can zero in on these workforce needs. And this funding would be very valuable to jumpstart this, to be able to retrofit these buildings, do the programming, and these will be countywide or can be more than that, but would include all the school districts that would be part of the plan in the county. So members, thank you so much for your attention and for hearing House File 31.
Very well, Chair Marco. Thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. Looking forward to having more conversation on this. With that, I renew my motion, House File 4198 be re-referred to the Industrial, Education, Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee. Mr. Badri will take the role.
Chair Noor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Zhang.
Aye.
Lead Hamilton.
Aye.
Baker.
No.
Daphne.
Daphne, aye.
Frankie.
Frankie, no.
Greenman.
Aye.
Haley.
No.
Juergens.
Juergens, aye.
Cagle.
Aye.
Katiza Watun. Olson. Jean.
Aye.
Chair Noor, we have 8 ayes and 3 nays.
With 8 ayes and 3 nays, the motion prevails. Chair Marquardt, you're on your way to Industrial Education and Economic Development. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate that.
Thank you. The next bill is House File 3798. Representative Agbaje, welcome back to the committee. Please, I'll move your bill, House File 3798, be laid over for possible inclusion. Please introduce the bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I am here today to present House File 3798. This is a bill that would continue and expand the work that's being done by Summit Academy OIC. Summit Academy is a leader in workforce development in the Twin Cities, training or educating adults each year with marketable skills in healthcare, building trades, construction, IT, along with a 10-week GED program. Summit Academy students attend without paying any out-of-pocket tuition or student loans. Students participate in a 20-week training program that prepares them for the workforce. The Academy is again taking action and leadership in the moment by launching a virtual network to bring their employment, placement, and STEM programs to all Minnesotans through an in-person and virtual statewide network. So with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers. I believe we have Lewis King, CEO of Summit Academy, and Leroy West, president of Summit Academy here, as well as we'll hear testimony from Murray Abdallah. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that.
Thank you so much, Representative Agbaje. I see Mr. King. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Lewis King, CEO of Summit Academy OIC, where we believe the best social service program in the world is a job. As been stated earlier, we are facing a structural labor shortage, which will endure throughout the decade because of low birth rates and the exit of the baby boomers. We also have a tremendous demand being put upon us by the explosion of technology. And this really takes us back to 100 years ago when we were moving from agrarian to manufacturing. We find ourselves once again at those crossroads, which presents quite an opportunity for African-Americans who in their tremendous progress and journey in this country have taken advantage of economic opportunities and will do so now to continue the work of the civil rights movement. Summit Academy OIC has a proven track record and a long history of putting people to work and giving them jobs that provide access to the middle class. As stated, we charge no tuition and our average placement wage is $40,000 a year. And in our technology program, we have graduates who started after 20 weeks with no debt at $60,000 a year. They learn remotely and they are working remotely. These people no longer need support programs. They are staunchly in the middle class. We are now taking the next step to find the forgotten people in the forgotten places. We understand the social and economic isolation of Greater Minnesota as it parallels the same in the inner cities. Mr. West will talk to you about our virtual network that we are establishing and our partners such as US Bank, Atomic Data, and others. And by the way, we have the largest construction training program for certifications in the state of Minnesota. It was researched by the Minnesota State Chamber of Commerce, and we're proud that we helped build all three stadiums and helped to produce business managers, superintendents, and now people of color are also running businesses, and we have women wear hard hats too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mr. King, for your testimony. Mr. West, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Leroy West, president of Summit Academy OIC, and I want to thank you for allowing me to share an overview of who we are and what we do. I'm going to walk you through a slide deck that highlights our organization. Next slide. We are an accredited institution, vocational institution that serves over 1,000 students annually. We're also licensed through the Minnesota Office of Higher Education and recognized as a leader in short-term training. Our programs are 20 weeks in length, and we have 5 enrollments a year. We have 2 campuses. One is pictured here in this slide, located on the corner of Plymouth and Penn in North Minneapolis, which we house our IT training. We train in three industry areas, which the first one is the information technology. The program areas that we focus on are service desk, cybersecurity, application development. We launched our IT program about 3 years ago with the help of our business partner, Atomic Data. Since we've expanded our relationships with many corporate partners, and many of them are listed on this slide. And as mentioned before, U.S. Bank helped launch our application development track, which placed seven graduates making an average wage of $60,000 a year. Our construction program, we have electrician, carpentry, and we also have solar. And we are one of the largest women and minority construction training providers in the region. We also have a healthcare program. Our program areas is medical administrative assistant, and with more programs in development. And as mentioned before, we also have a 10-week GED program as well. Next slide. This is our matriculation model, and this shows the path to the middle class. A student enters the education and training phase that is 20 weeks, and as noted before, at no out-of-pocket cost. We also provide student support, which includes funds that assist them with the barriers. During weeks 18 to 20, students participate in a two-week job experience where many of them find employment. And where the bullseye is, that represents the transition to life after Summit. And as noted before, our average placement wage is $40,000 a year. And assume a second income in a household is making at least $15 an hour, they now have a combined income of $70,000 to start. This is when the alumni program kicks in. And we provide resources to our graduates as they navigate their careers to higher aiming points to hit that $50,000 and then $73,000. We engage our employers, community college, on the front end to align our curriculum to employers' expectations. And because we're an accredited institution, we also can establish articulation agreements with 2-year and 4-year college institutions as well. Next slide. 73% of our students are students of color. 78%, 49% are Black. 57% of our students come from Hennepin County, 23% come from Ramsey County. Although we have students come from over 100 different zip codes, 45% are unemployed, and 69% of them are under the 200% federal poverty guideline. So most of our students that come to us are poor students. Next slide. This is our growth chart. And this is the program. We have a plan to reach to 2,000 students by fiscal year 25. As you can see, and back in fiscal year 19, which was prior to the pandemic, we were enrolling 989 and completing 518, and we placed 424. During the pandemic, fiscal year 20 and 21, we were restricted our growth because of we had space restrictions. However, we're now on the rebound and coming back. We will hit the 2,000 students and also placing over 900 students annually. Next slide. This is how are we going to do that? And this is the virtual network. We have, we will connect with low-income communities of color in in-demand, high-wage occupations and employers. We will have different community-based organizations located around the Seven County Metro so that students do not have to take 3 buses from east side of St. Paul in order to come to us. We can come to them. We now be able to beam our classrooms and be able to train remotely so that we can reduce that transportation barrier for them to come to Summit. We can bring the program right to them. Next slide. We're also expanding our reach statewide to Bemidji. We're working with the Northwest Indian Community Development Corporation to offer online cybersecurity training. So our vision is also to provide job skill training in IT to low-income residents in that region and connect them to job opportunities statewide. Next slide. Here are just a few of the many student success stories we hear. Our students come to us from all walks of life. They're motivated to gain the skills required to start a career and take care of themselves and their families. Next slide. The state has been a great partner, and we're asking you to continue the investment. Our plan is to enroll 2,000 students and place 900 graduates in jobs annually is a great return. This funding is very critical for us to continue to do the work that we do. That concludes my presentation, and I'd like to thank the chair and the committee members, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. West. I see Mr. Mira Abdullah ready to testify. Please keep your testimony brief because we only have a few minutes left before we take the next bill. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mira Abdul. I am a Summit Academy OIC alumni. Before attending Summit Academy, I was unemployed. I did a 20-week session for application development starting from April 2021 to September 2021. In the end of November, I got a job with Accenture as a software engineer apprentice. And that's what I'm doing currently. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Abdul, for your testimony and congratulations on finding a technology-based, as an IT background. Personally, I always advocate for technology, so thank you so much for that testimony. Members, any discussion? Seeing none, in the interest of time, I see Representative Haley.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair. I know that you're trying to move forward. I just wanted to thank Representative Abaje for bringing it forward. I've had the chance to meet with Dr. King and also with Mr. West pretty much every year that I've been in the legislature, but most recently, just a couple months ago. This is a fantastic program and the solutions work. I do have some concern just about us from a budgetary perspective that we need to solve the UI program. And I know you share my interest in doing that, Chair, before we make determinations on our larger budget and our larger surplus. So I wanted to speak in support of the program so people know that my no vote today is related to those other issues. But if this came to the House floor, I would be a yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Haley, for your comment there. So Representative Agbaje, any closing remarks? I know this is a great program and I urge you all members to go visit the center and see for yourself the great work that is happening at the Summit OIC in the technology field. So Representative Agbaje.
I think Summit Academy's work speaks for itself. So thank you members for your time today.
Thank you so much. With that, I renew my motion, House File 3798, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And I look forward to having more conversation about the UI as we deliberate on that issue. So thank you so much, Vice Chair Agbaje. Thank you. The next bill, we have a few minutes left. We will extend the time, hopefully, for Vice Chair Jay Zhong. Welcome to your own committee. Please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is basically a bill to support small businesses who play a crucial role in all of our districts and small business owners who are near half the workforce in Minnesota, creating jobs, expanding the tax base, and contributing to the vitality of our communities. But starting and maintaining a business presents a lot of challenges to entrepreneurs, especially if they don't have traditional access to resources or the necessary startup capital. Business owners that work with an advisor or officer from a nonprofit economic development organization or CDFI are more likely to not only avoid costly mistakes, but actually set up a path to a successful business for years to come. D doesn't work directly with small business, so this network of organizations was the main distributor of hundreds of millions during the COVID-19 economic relief. This bill, House File 2978, would provide additional funding, support for a proven competitive grant program, the Small Business Partnership Grant Program, formerly the Business Development Competitive Grant Program. This funding has been helping nonprofit economic development organizations offer business technical assistance to entrepreneurs and small business owners for over a decade. And across the entire state, this funding is also targeted to serve small business owners and entrepreneurs that are from the BIPOC community, women, veterans, and people with disabilities. Last session, a $7 million one-time funding increase was passed, allowing for 37 organizations to receive funding compared to on an average 14 in previous years. You should have received an email with more information in your packets. As noted on the other handle, annually around 3,500 small business owners are helped and $40 million in private financing is leveraged to support community-based business. Because of the competitive application process, this program ensures that dollars are being spent evenly between Greater Minnesota and the metro area, and that nonprofits receiving awards report data to DEED. We have heard iterations of this bill in the past, but there are a couple notable things this bill will do. First, it would change the name of the program to Small Business Partnership Grant. The name change was used by DEED in the most recent grant round, and recipients believe it more accurately reflects the work this program aims to do. Second, the bill would clarify that cooperatives, employee-owned businesses, and commercial land trusts are eligible businesses for such funding. And third, this bill would allocate additional one-time funding of $10 million for fiscal year 23, proportionally to existing grantees, and increase the base to $20 million each biennium. This afternoon, I'm joined by business advisors and small business who will be sharing more.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Zhong. Vice Chair Zhong moves House File 2978 be laid over before we transition to the testifiers. I have Ms. Lukundu. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Noor, members of the committee. My name is Christine Lukundu, and I'm the Business Development Program Manager for African Development Center. I head the business development unit, and we provide loans to small businesses, mainly targeting immigrants, people of color, and others. ADC, African Development Center, is a nonprofit focused on championing African immigrants and refugees across Minnesota, helping them overcome barriers to financial security through credit building, home buyer education, and what I'm here to talk to you about today. Is entrepreneurship and starting a business. Additionally, our mission is focused on building wealth and increasing reinvestment in the communities of African immigrants who have called Minnesota their home. ADC was founded in 2004 in Minneapolis, but has expanded statewide to meet the needs of growing African immigrant population around the state. ADC has satellite offices in Rochester, Wilma, St. Cloud, as well as throughout the metro area. Our staff is made up of highly qualified and talented individuals from an array of African nations that bring a passion to their work and represent a wide range of areas of entrepreneurship and small business expertise. Our expertise has helped ADC be a leader in microlending to Minnesota small businesses, as well as a leader in providing critical business advising and technical assistance. Our technical assistant work has been supported in part through Small Business Partnership Grant Program, formerly the Business Development Competitive Grant Program at DEED. ADC, along with many other nonprofit economic development organizations and CDFIs, have helped to ensure the strength of Minnesota's economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. Collectively, a Minnesota nonprofit economic development organization pivoted at the start of the pandemic and have been the main organizations to distribute over $200 million in economic assistance to small businesses, which helped businesses owners adapt to the ever-changing environment the past 2 years and have now continued to help many small businesses grow. As mainstream banks and financial institutions continue to lack resources, funds, and cultural understanding to expand their service to meet the complex needs of African immigrants, ADC has been able to step in and fill those gaps, including business consulting and technical assistance. ADC has provided more than 1,000 individuals technical assistance and continues to do so till date. ADC has not only helped to provide opportunities for small business owners, but many times these businesses help to meet crucial community needs. One example is Evercare Orthotics and Prosthetics, owned by Ms. Hannah Arson, which she established following her passions for orthotics and prosthetics during her preteen years in the Somali capital of Mogadishu, after she witnessed a life-changing event in her family. When a mortar attack hit her uncle's house and amputated him on the spot, this was a key event in the eventual creation of Evercare Orthotics and Prosthetics that ADC has funded. Hannah is now dedicated for providing her services in the East African community that has a history of barriers in gaining medical attention and services. She believes it's important for these clients to see a practitioner that looks like them, speaks their language, and understands their culture needs. This way, community members can understand and receive the services they need and deserve to access. Hannah came to ADC after looking into more traditional financial institutions and seeing that we could fit the needs of her business better. Much like her desire to help bridge the gap in orthotics and prosthetics industry, she saw that ADC has the same goal in the work that we do. Together, we were able to help Hannah accomplish her goal.
Ms. Lukud, because of the time, I would like you to wrap up your testimony so we can get to the two and also the other two individuals. We have got a limited time. We're already past time. So please conclude your testimony.
I'll be concluding shortly. So together, we were able to help Hannah accomplish her goal of opening her first clinic in the state of Minnesota. I urge you to support House File 2978 and make increased funding for the Small Business Partnership Grant Program a priority, because this is a proven program that works and supports many organizations rather than just one. I want to thank Representative Jay Jung for carrying this bill and for the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Mr. Daisane, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and give us your brief testimony, because we'll be concluding soon.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Noor, members of the committee. My name is Abdi Daisane. I am the owner and manager of Blooming Kids Child Care Center located here in St. Cloud. We have been operational a little over 5 years, supporting our working families in Eastern Spenton and Sherburne counties who are in need of a safe and nurturing childcare for their little ones. Some of you in the committee, including Representative Noor, are familiar to our center. I want to acknowledge on the record for paying a visit to us a couple years ago during your tour to central Minnesota. I also want to take this opportunity to thank you all for your efforts in supporting small businesses during the most challenging time in our time. My business and many small businesses in central Minnesota were beneficiaries of the state grants administered by Initiative Foundation, which I know many of you and your staff worked tirelessly to pass it and bring it to small businesses like mine. It helped to keep our doors open, and we thank you for that. Today, I'm here in support of House File 2978 and want to urge you all to continue to invest in small businesses by providing resources in the form of technical assistance. I can tell you, as small business owner myself, and as someone who have worked with small businesses in our area through Initiative Foundation, how invaluable TA, technical assistance, is for businesses recovering, especially recovering from COVID-19 pandemic. As we are starting to recover from COVID-19, it's important for our small businesses to get the tools and resources they need, such as business review, business plan review, business support, bookkeepings, accountings, those supports, and mentoring and coaching services. And I'll tell you why this is important for them to be given in a form of assistance. One, these are resources that small businesses cannot afford to hire expertise and have it in-house. Two, small businesses have been among the powerful engine for job creation. To conclude, I know you're looking at the time, so I'll be quick here. Small businesses help define our communities and support the overall strengths of our Minnesota economy. Let's invest in them because the return of investment is greater. Thank you for allowing me to testify in favor of House File 2978.
Thank you so much. Now to Ms. Butler, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed, and please keep it brief.
Good afternoon, Chair Noor, members of the committee. My name is Denise Butler, and I'm the Director of Economic Development for African Career Education and Resources, Inc., or ACER, we're known as. I support ACER's economic and business development in the Northwest suburbs, so in the Brooklands area, Maple Grove. And these communities are home to an estimated 8,000 immigrants hailing primarily from Liberia, Somalia, and Nigeria, just to name a few. ACER believes African immigrants understand complex issues and know their communities best. We elevate the voices of our community members. We build bridges between residents and decision makers so that our knowledge and expertise are represented in policies that shape our communities. ACER supports the small and micro businesses that are the economic backbone of BIPOC immigrant communities in the Northwest suburbs. Our work includes connecting businesses to resources, providing free technical assistance and one-to-one business consulting, training for startups and new business owners, and distributing microgrants, fundings, and scholarships. The $7 million one-time increase in funding available to support small businesses, technical assistance work opened up a new financial resource for ACER. We are a first-time grant recipient of the Small Business Partnership Grant Program. This funding has allowed ACER to expand our technical assistance work and better meet the needs of the communities we serve. Currently, we are carrying on the work of supporting the Main Street businesses and entrepreneurs with the Main Street revitalization work, working in partnership with cities and opening economic hubs across the Northwest suburbs. All these initiatives take intentional funds to support the business community in starting, sustaining, and growing their businesses. I urge you to support the HF 2978 and make permanent funding for the program a priority. I want to thank you, Representative Jay Zhang and Chair Noor, for your support and the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony to Vice Chair Jay Zhang, closing and renewing your motion before we conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for your support. Looking forward to having this bill be included in the on this bill, so I will renew my motion to House File 2978 and be laid over for possible inclusion.
Vice Chair Jay Zhang renews his motion, House File 2978 be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, members, I just wanted to remind you on Monday, we're looking forward to having a hybrid hearing. It's going to be in room 120. Please look forward to your emails. I don't see any other agenda item on our list, so we are now adjourned. Thank you so much.